Glad to be here. I've been on this continent from Malaysia for the last 44 years. Yes, I have to. Years keep rolling faster than I can keep track. Right? The older you get, the years go faster. At least that's what I sense. So this is my 40th year of public ministry. Just completed 40 years, and most of it have been based out of North America. Prior to coming here, I did part-time work with InterVarsity, pioneered work from Malaysia to Central India, pioneered two city contacts. And then I've been based here, both in the U.S. I was in the U.S. in the early 70s. I went to teach at Canadian Theological Seminary that took me to the frozen tundra of Saskatchewan. And I'm frozen and stuck there. But I do travel. I travel about 70% of the time. I'm no more teaching full-time. But do a lot of ministries trying to promote and challenge because there's so much to be done. Help yourself to a green sheet. There's so much to be done in so many areas. And one area is the very subject that we are dealing with right here at this conference at iSpectra. So somewhere around 95 it sense, I needed to take my time, not be tied up with theses and papers and exams and lectures, decided to get back on the road where I started in the 70s, and glad to be here and glad to be part of iSpectra. I come from Malaysia. In some ways, that whole issue of multiculturalism, I lived and grew with it. Malaysia has three major ethnic groups. The Malays, which are very much part of the Polynesian connections. Then you have the Chinese. Then you have Indians, Sri Lankans constituting 7%. Chinese used to be about 30, and the Malays, and then of course European. Now I grew up in a city called Melaka. It was the first place the colonial connections was made when Vasco da Gama came and established Melaka as the Portuguese center for all of East Asia, Southeast Asia and East Asia. And then the Dutch came, and then the British came. So I grew up in a city that has all those histories, and then put this other races into the picture. So if you go to Malacca, you left the Dutch colony and the Portuguese colony, and of course the rest of us were connected to the British when we became independent. So I grew up and I developed my own thinking with a multi-ethnic, multicultural context. Now when I came to the West, I suddenly realized it's not Malaysia. Okay? It's not Malaysia. And I then had to rethink how to do ministry, because we saw very isolated churches and the way we think and we function. So we're going to start with this. I want you to go back, because we won't have time at the end. Go back to the selected recommended books here. Anything that's asterisk, I say, that those are the key books. The rest are helpful. Let me tell you, somebody that has done both theological work and practical insights. If you want to start with a book as foundational to you, it should be Stephen Rhodes' book, Where the Nations Meet, The Church in the Multicultural World. So he, in Virginia, he established this, or he transformed this church monocultural to multicultural, and throughout that book there is chapters that has both theological biblical principles and then practical application with which he has experimented. Now he, after developing a wonderful church, decided to go during his sabbatical and talk to about 25 other pastors across the U.S. who were attempting to do what he was also trying to do. So he, out of that came out his thesis, and this is basically his popularized version of his thesis. So, mission shift, reaching the door, world next door. You'll see an exhibit with my friend Roland Wells. They have developed a wonderful educational process to move your congregation to thinking how to reach the multicultural world. And then many other books, resource, the best I could find. So let me start quickly in one sentence. If you come from the same church, then don't repeat it, but in one sentence or two, tell me who you are and what church and what your church would look like if I showed up on Sunday. Okay, let's start with that. Your name and the kind of church your church is.
Okay, my name is Matthew Chu. Go to Centerville Presbyterian Church in Fremont. You know, pretty multicultural.
Right, okay.
Sarah Marr. I go to Centerville, same church.
Okay.
A Jewish son, and I go to Bridget Community Church in Fremont. And I guess on a Sunday, I would describe the church as a bunch of, a larger church of a pretty diverse congregation.
Okay. Yes, you're from here. Okay, Alan?
Alan Barnes, First Baptist Church in Watsonville.
Okay.
And our community is 80% Hispanic, 20% gringo. And our church is 20% Hispanic and 80% gringo.
Okay. Okay.
I'm Jay Dalhauser. I'm a missionary in Storm Lake, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different cultures there in a small community. Churches don't look the way the community does.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I'm Sam Furrier.
Right, so we know.
Joey Wang. Attend pastor of a Chinese church, but an English-speaking congregation of the Chinese church.
We're right here.
In San Jose.
San Jose.
Dave Gatchel Bridges, Community Church, Los Altos.
Same name, different church.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'd say we're growing in diversity.
Okay.
I am Charlie Moon from a Korean Imani Church.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I know Emmanuel.
My name is Broad. I'm from Santa Clara Valley Japanese Christian Church. It's primarily a
Japanese church, okay. The back.
Errol Gideon, representing EAM with Bible League. Also, I attend Harvard Bible Chapel in Chicago, Illinois.
Right.
Multicultural, multi-ethnic church.
Multi-ethnic church.
I attend churches in Temecula, and my church is pretty much white. There's some browns and black people, but culturally it's all white.
Right, okay. Who else?
I'm Ron King, I'm a Bridges.
Right, Bridges.
Justin Long, Evangelical Methodist, Stockton. Mm. Mm. We're mixed race.
Thanks.
Tim Brenda from Monitor Chapel in Turlock. It's mostly white, but we have a number of Iranians and Syrians in that area.
Okay, good.
I'm Chad Goodman with Centerville Press in Fremont, and we're very transitional. We're traditionally Caucasian, but we have a lot of folks from
Okay.
World College Fellowship, we're a network of primarily Filipinos.
Mm. Okay.
I'm John Roller. I'm also with the American Network. Those who came to my church on Sundays were sort of a missionary to a small rural farming community.
All right.
With a level of our ethnic diversity
the non-long and the long. We have all been in those kind of churches too, right? So actually, we're going to follow the outline and sing, and anytime you want to ask a question, feel free. And answering that will depend upon whether I know the answer. We need to, what's that? I'm sorry. You're right.
Yes, so my name is Alex Kurosawa. I'm from Almaden Neighborhood Church, which is only 3 miles in the south from this location.
Right.
We are very diverse, and probably one third to half of the members are children. Mm-hmm. We are multicultural, multi-generational, multi-ethnic church.
Okay.
Bill Steely from Bridges Community Church, and we have a multi-ethnic, multicultural church. Mm-hmm.
Jamie Sandoz from Bridges Community Church of Fremont.
Dan, thanks. I talked to them, and I
was curious.
No, that's valid. We need to understand, when we talk about generations, we need to understand what some terminology is. So we need to get some common terminology, common language, so that we understand what we mean when we talk some of the concepts. Number one, the definition of generations. Generation one is when you come to a host country as an adult. Okay? As an adult. That's what we mean. Secondly, we say 1.5 is born outside the country. Harold, I need help again. This gave trouble earlier. Okay, we'll continue. Here's my hired help. The rates are pretty high, so I'll only pay out of this world. 1.5, born outside the country but reared in the host country. And so the 1.5, in some ways I wish we could rename it, but sociologists defined it some time back. But when I talk about strategy, I go from 1.1 to 1.9, depending upon the age at which they came. So some are closer to a second generation, and because they came very young, and some who came at 13, they are more closer to the first generation. But sociologically, literature says 1.5, that's the working definition. Thirdly, generation 2 is born and raised in host country, right? And generation 3 is the children of generation 1.5 and 2. So that's when we talk about generations, and especially the next seminar I'll do tomorrow has to do with that. Got disconnected?
Yep.
Okay. So let's keep going. Understanding the 10 different kinds of churches. Now, over the years, I've done some studies about churches, and when people say to me, we are this kind of church, they have one definition, maybe valid for them, but the categories are mixed, even right here. The terms we use, but what is the animal look like? We are this. And what you're describing is true, but when you compare other congregations, you just do not know, are they the same animal, smaller? You know, is it animal with spots? So I have worked at trying to say, what are the major 10 categories that I've discovered most common? And so that comes from research, actual field research, talking to about maybe 70 churches in the U.S., and Canada. And this, we will...
It's only 30%. We go have to...
Reboot.
The computer again, yeah.
Okay.
After we start.
Okay. Okay, number one is homogeneous mainstream society church. Now, I could have called heritage culture churches, but I'm going to use, I have decided to use mainstream. Mainstream, so when we talk about, help yourself to one sheet. You may want to sit there, because, thank you. When we talk about mainstream, so that means people primarily from the culture where the church is planted. So, in some ways you can say it's monocultural. But you said these are people from that culture for a long time. And uses the dominant language of the immediate society. So, just to change your thinking, if we planted a church, if a church in French Quebec, it will be made up of Quebecers, but they will use French because it's the language of the mainstream society. Okay? So,
what? I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
Just getting an update, it's only 35%. It's going to take longer.
Yeah, but
if that has a password, I don't have the password because this computer is not mine. Somebody brought it over here. So.
You have your presentation
on the last slide? Yes.
When we pull out this, we disconnect it from
it. Oh, I see.
There it goes.
Okay.
Hey.
Okay.
I'm going to put a full screen.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad I'm paying you.
I'm glad I'm paying you.
Okay. So homogeneous mainstream society, as a diagram, the church reflects the mainstream cultural and society. That's what homogeneous mainstream church looks like. Number two, homogeneous ethnic church consists of one ethnic group. So this is what we will call usually an ethno-specific church. So a Chinese congregation in Fremont or a Japanese congregation in San Jose or a Spanish congregation, but the majority culture is not Spanish. It may be soon coming, but right now it's not. And you find a homogeneous ethnic church. Okay? So this was planted by generation one people, and the power is with generation one. So there may be second generation congregations in it, but the power is with generation one. Okay. Three, what's happening? They freeze us. This is not. No. You may have to change computer.
Froze.
Yeah. We may have to change computer.
Let me bring.
Oh, you're going to bring?
I'll give you
the laptop. I got my computer.
Oh, no.
It's going to cost you more.
Yeah, the overtime is going to be bad. The third one is homogeneous ethnic church with services in two different languages or more. So homogeneous ethnic church with services in two different languages. But usually it is primarily a one ethnic background. And offer one culture. So one ethnicity and culture. It serves generation two with its own pastor as an English ministry, and usually it's the language of the mainstream culture. So
it's uniqueness,
right? Uniqueness. So Chinese churches with English speaking congregation and pastors, and you'll notice both sides of the border, the challenge to find English-speaking Chinese second-gen pastors are a big challenge. So we'll now see Caucasians pastoring English ministry congregations in Chinese and Korean and Vietnamese churches. Okay, so and most homogeneous ethnic churches will need to create such services if they are attempting to minister to the second generation. We back up, say, to the 60s, though I was not here, but I've done research. I found out in the 60s, they tried to keep them in the same congregation and tried to inculcate that they will learn language and they will learn worship songs and they will memorize hymns, and somehow they'll make a Korean out of an American-born person, or a Vietnamese out of that. That attempts have been abandoned. Now they have recognized we need to accommodate that need, so they bring in, usually starts what they call youth pastor, and then moves on to EM or English ministry, and then when they can afford, they get a full-time pastor to take that. But most EM congregations and pastors don't sense they have authority. Okay. Don't sense they have authority. They have responsibility but not authority. Okay. I'm being very blatant, okay?
Still in generation one.
Oh, generation one. And I'm being very straight because we have to face this up. Face up to this and deal with this, otherwise we will not build the kingdom.
They don't have.
They don't have.
Try the point.
Okay.
Yep.
Hey.
Don't.
And let's give him a big hand, because I can't pay him that much.
You can trust him.
Okay. So this helpful. Okay. So here's a statement. Here's a statement. It's a person he had seen me when he was about 9 years old. I was back in the church about 3 years ago preaching. And he says, I know you. And then he tells me when I was there. And then he says, how are you doing? And he says this. During the week, I manage a $33 million portfolio. On Sunday, I'm treated like a great niner. A great nine person. During the week, I handle a $33 million portfolio. But on Sunday, I'm treated as a great nine person.
Ninth grader.
Ninth grader.
Ninth grader, yeah.
You know, and I have children who are in grade one. He succinctly said that to me. Right there. I mean, because he said, oh, Dr. Thomas, I know who you are. And then he said, how are you doing? And he tells us. And I thought, this captures what I've sensed and heard in bits and pieces in all kinds of ethnic, Iranian. One of my roles is, I'm the consultant for ethnic ministries for all the Alliance churches in Canada. So I relate to about 43 ethnic groups, and I hear the similar sentiments in other places. Fourthly, international church. Now, though there are churches with that in their title, the name, I think is a misnomer, because the word international has already been claimed by churches that are established in key cities of the world, which has become the collection point or ministry worshiping site of people from diverse traditions, but they come because there's no other language, English language church. They are willing to give up their polity and their extra secondary tertiary issues and just glad to worship in English with people who can speak it beautifully. And so these international churches serve internationals. They serve expats from the national perspective. They call them expatriates. Here as diplomats, as business consultants, working, and they're not immigrants to their country. They're temporary residents, anything from 6 months to 6 to 8 years. Very few international churches do you find somebody who's been there 15 years. Often interdenominational flavor, often few locals attend. And in some countries of the world, locals are not allowed to attend. To enter that church, you have to show your passport. So in Beijing, in Vietnam, you have to show your passport to enter this church. Delhi, the international church serving expat community, is not your offering that's the most important, it's your passport that's most important. In these congregations, people come and go, and I'll tell you when you talk to it, I'm connected to what's called the MICN, with Missional International Churches Network, and I speak in their conferences. And they will say one of the biggest challenges of international churches is to keep a committee together for 12 months. Elders board for 12 months. Because somebody's company says, you're moving 2 months now to Bandung from Kuwait. And you thought you're going to rely on him to pull it through for you, whatever project, and suddenly, he thought he was there for 3 years, suddenly he is in Bandung, Indonesia. I tell you, leadership, the constitution to how you select and when you select leaders has to be quite fluid. Okay, that's it. But I'll say that's what I call international church. Okay, truly international, made up of people away from the home country, but a mix of races, but all worshiping together. Fifthly, is what called mainstream society church with ethnics and internationals. This is commonly present in many cities, especially with cities with over 200,000 people. You may want to sit there because I move and I kick. No, sorry. No, I'm just... So in a mainstream society, but you have a sprinkling of people from many nations. Maybe there's no one major concentration of a large group in that church. Is what I call mainstream society with ethnics and internationals. This is often the result of some people of the church being sensitive, welcoming ethnics in the church, or somebody drops in, comes to live in the area, decides to come to your church is embracing, welcoming, and they say, we park here. Okay? We park here.
They're monocultural.
Yes, they buy into the majority culture church, okay? So he could be Korean, he could be Bosnian, he could be Brazilian, but he has said, I want to be part of the mainstream monocultural church and buy into mainstream worship structure and flavor.
This is multicultural, but it could be multi-ethnic.
Now, we use multi-ethnic, but it's only multi-ethnic in the pew. It's only visibly multi-ethnic. Okay? I'm not in preference of any one model. But you just need to know who you are. Accept it and function within that. But if you don't accept who you are, and you're trying to do something that you're not, you're going to experience frustration, and you'll frustrate your worshippers. Okay? That's all I'm saying. I'm not pushing you to be what you don't want to be.
How are we mainstream?
Okay.
So this particular church, in trying to be very ethnic, might be missing it because even though the people come from ethnic backgrounds, they identify with a common culture.
Right. The mainstream culture. And I'm not saying it's wrong. hear me right, okay? I want you to know, people have chosen to say, you know, let's say, a Singaporean comes to Santa Clara or whatever, and says, I'm going to be living here, my children are going to live here, we want to be part of the mainstream culture, and here's a church that accepts me as I am. I go to such kind of a church. I plugged in from the day I walked in. Second Sunday I was washer. Second Sunday I was usher. See, I've accepted, that's okay. This is an ethnic church with other ethnics. So say, in somewhat rare, but it's becoming more so in the last 10 years. But it was very rare in the early 90s and all of 80s and 70s. Let me tell you what's the group that's doing the best. Filipinos. Filipino churches often find it much easier to welcome people from other ethnic groups.
It's interesting also they have the most cross-cultural marriages.
Right, right. You know, that's because of that. And there's a reason for that. One, if you look at the history of Philippines, the Spanish, the American, I mean their willingness to adapt, adopt, improvise, marry, you know, they by culturally, historically, they are prepared to mix. And they also embrace very quickly. Okay, Philippines. But I've not seen many others do that as well. Yet, things may change. But my observation is right now, Filipinos are the most embracing of all cultures. So it's ethnic church, could be Filipino church, but with others. It could be a Nigerian family in there, Iranian family in there, two, three Caucasian families in there. And they feel comfortable, and people feel comfortable.
So like, as far as language?
It's English. It's primarily English.
Same language, but not
right.
As far as culture.
I would say that is, Filipino culture comes through in food and festivities. Okay. Seven is mainstream society church with ethnic fellowships.
Call that the multi-ethnic building.
So a mainstream society church that has a vision and a heart for reaching and ministering to other ethnic groups of people in the community. Often there's a centralized service in the dominant culture, language, but is willing to schedule ministry programs which is ethnic specific. Mm-hmm. It's blessed by the church, not done undercover. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody says, you know, do you know they're meeting in that you know, the elders board doesn't have to get nervous. What is happening here? Now this is fully approved, blessed, and the leaders are recognized, usually, who is doing that. Okay? So they may meet Friday night, they meet Saturday night, they meet Sunday afternoon, or home fellowships. But the senior pastor of this church is often from the dominant culture, mainstream culture. The senior pastor.
So in terms of this church setting, the fellowship still attend the worship service, or they don't attend?
In this one, they attend.
They attend.
Right. Subset fellowships. Okay. And if language is an issue, they provide language translation with earphones and all that. Okay. Number eight, mainstream society which hosts ethnic fellowships. Now what does that mean? Facilitates the worship of other congregations using the same facility. You may rent it, you may even donate the space and say, we love to bless you. You can use our fellowship hall. You can use it on Sunday. They host. Now unfortunately, when you do statistical research of denominations, in the reporting systems, there is some what I would say is not dishonest
flaws
where they report to their big denomination, we have a Vietnamese church, but they're only renting. They're a no-name brand church. But in the reporting, it is said, oh, suddenly somebody sitting in Iowa from the same denomination said, man, wow. They're doing it in Boulder, Colorado. Why can't I do it in Ottumwa? You know, feel jealous, but the truth is, they're just renting. They only give a key.
And they totally us.
And that is on loan. The key is on loan.
Yeah.
Interest free.
You're done when they change the key.
Mainstream society church taken over by ethnics. This happens when there's a massive influx of immigrants into that area, especially churches, especially downtown, as their attendance is coming lower and lower from mainstream. People who used to live nearby now have moved to the suburbs. They're driving in. The only time they show up in church is when there is a Sunday service and on days there is a potluck. And so, but the immigrants have to live nearby. They can't afford houses and things. They come to church and they populate. They like this church and they bring more and bring more. And suddenly at annual meeting, they can vote the white church out. It has happened all over the states and Canada. I can give you examples. A church in Baldwin Park was infiltrated by Filipinos. You know, when I first preached there in 1972, it was all white with one Hispanic married to one American-born person. By the time 1982 came, it was taken over by the Spanish in numbers. 85, it was a Filipino pastor and a Filipino church. In Flushing, New York, Spanish came in, took over a mainstream church, and became that. Now, I wish these stories were happened with cordiality and blessing. Usually it was hijacked. You know, I wish the mainstream realized we want to bless you with this building. And we're glad that you guys have found a home here. But unfortunately, that's not always true. And they have to ask forgiveness. And number 10, intentionally intercultural church or intentionally multi-ethnic church. The operative word is intentional. When we talk about intentional intercultural, we are talking about intercultural means no culture is excluded. All people interface with each other regardless of ethnic cultural origin. The problem with many models prior to this is we think the mainstream looks at the other people as ethnic and they have a culture, as if white is not ethnic and have a culture. Friends, my definition is sociological. Everyone is ethnic. If you're not ethnic, you're dead. Dead and buried, that's the issue. When you come to this, you recognize everybody's ethnic. And we are going to interface and learn from each other. An IMC congregation is one that cannot be easily characterized by just one set of cultural practices or dominated by one ethnicity.
So does it exist in a community that is also like that?
Usually. Now, so this church seeks to be multi-ethnic, multilingual, multi-generational. Usually the primary language used is that of the mainstream society, but parts of worship could include different languages. So there's a church, it's changed its name, Morningstar Ministries in Toronto, pastored by a missionary overseas who came back because of health reasons for his children, and he took a dying church, 40 people or less, and they couldn't afford the building, they were going to sell it. But he had a vision as he drove past, and he offered to work and to lead this congregation without pay. And he turned the church around. Intentionally multicultural church. One of the best first examples on the Canadian side of this story. Multicultural.
I've only seen one in my travels here to the Bay Area, and that's The Point.
Okay.
And it has six congregations. They come together for one worship. They use two languages. The six congregations each has its own pastor, Cambodian, Mandarin, Cantonese, etc., Tagalog. And they each worship in their own language, and they all own the building.
Right. And we'll talk about some of these challenges of these IMC churches, obviously. And so, And I'm telling you that if you are going to catch and capture and retain second generation, we have to have a few IMC churches. We have to be intentional. And I am championing that for that reason. Not saying this is the best and only, but for the second generation who eats and sleeps and plays and jokes with fellow people from the mainstream society and all the things, when they come to church, why should they worship in one that is different from the rest of their experience the rest of the week? And so we need to, I'm saying to ethnic church leaders, you know, you have only two options. You're going to lose them, often to the kingdom total, or release them, or they slip away from your ethnicity, and even if they land in a mainstream society church, they will be less than fully functional. They'll attend, they may throw a few coins, they will not release their giftedness into full ministry. But if we can encourage the starting of IMC churches for that group to say and give them permission, go be part of that. We'll drop you there. We'll help you. We will capture. All the statistics show 70-80% of people coming from ethnic churches, kids grow up, don't end up in church. Why? They can't handle the tension they face. And they can't handle going to their mother's church, parents' church. They don't feel really welcomed in most mainstream churches. And then they say, I'll sort it out. The only problem is when they're taking 10 years to sort out, they've already set the direction for the rest of their life, for most of them, to come back. It's difficult. Make important choices which decides whether you go. Okay? So let's look, have you understood the different categories? Now I think when we go to the next slide, what are the challenges of IMC? Of IMC congregation. A lack of permission, lack of support, and lack of blessing to plant IMC congregations. I think it's not enough, now that I've interviewed and connected with a lot of people, it's not enough to tolerate them planting an IMC church. You can't do it with regret. I guess you have to, we should really commission them, encourage them to go do it, because we want kingdom advance. So many places there's no permission. If there's permission, there's no support. And if there's permission and support, there's no blessing. I think all three are important. Both permission and support, and then blessing. Blessing, very proud that they have gone and been part of that church. And bless it. And sometimes I think this is where we need to think kingdom, where we are going to say, it's not our denominational church. Maybe it's going to be a generic church, could be another denomination church. Hey, friends, I want to tell you, which is more important? The person or the label? I vote for person. Labels drop off as we take flight to meet Jesus. Number two, lack of understanding of issues in the planting and growing of IMC church congregations. And what are some issues? Barriers of language. Passive racism. Socioeconomic partiality. Ignorance of culture and worldviews. Exclusion of certain minority groups from leadership positions. And often is not done, I want to tell you, often is not done consciously. But unconsciously, you know, he's only one person from his group. We got nine families from that group. And we certainly think we need to be representative rather than looking at whether he is the leader or he is capable and competent. We look at representative voice. It's good to keep the representation, the backdrop, not in the forefront. Okay? So, thirdly, lack of adequate counsel and help available to develop IMC churches. So the last few years, I would say last 11, 12 years, I've been a champion of this, and I've dialogued, facilitated the process to birth IMC churches. And I can say I've learned by doing. I've learned by somebody else's mistakes. I've learned. And so we talk about how to put worship services together. What are the elements? What's the length of service? What elements of language are the scriptures going to be read in two different languages? Leadership styles and decision making. Preaching and teaching styles. How do you keep variety in the preaching and teaching styles? The whole issue of expressions of body life. Comes into play. The whole issue of how do you handle class differences from certain cultures. How do you handle age, the age issue? So in some cultures, age is a fairly high value. How do you dethrone that high value. And make a distinction between, make the distinction between honoring him or her for his or her age, for who they are, and making a distinction of their opinion or viewpoint. So how do you disagree with a person with who could be almost your father in the committee? But you know what he is suggesting would not attract people, would not be, we, you know, and all these are challenges, you know, are challenges. But I think anybody starting this journey needs to be open to saying, we are going to learn. We are going to put a lot of things at the foot of the cross. We are going to put all my experiences at the foot of the cross. I am going to take my age and put it at the cross. And the fact that I've been here for 44 years at the foot of the cross. I'm going to put the 5 rules I have had in 6 churches at the foot of the cross. That's what it takes.
Not just you, but everybody.
Yeah, everybody. I mean, that's the call we need to make. And that's why it's difficult to take an existing church of 30, 70 years old and make it intentionally multicultural, unless you want a backdoor revival to take place and then rebuild with those who remain. It's better to launch IMC churches with some understanding. Okay? Fourthly, the lack of what I call transcultural leaders. No transcultural leaders objectively understand and evaluate their own culture, worldview, through the lens of Scripture. You know, we have to come to the point that the Scripture judges all culture. All culture. And evaluate their own culture and worldview through the lens of Scripture. They are able to lead in their own culture, and able to define leadership in their own culture, but willing to learn and work beyond their own culture. So I'm not saying your culture is bad. You need to know, can you function in your own culture and accept, okay, this is how leadership is. So if I went to a culturally mono-ethnic, monolingual church, and I function there, I know how to function there, But then if you want to become a transcultural person, you need to learn how to go beyond and learn to function in the other culture. Takes time, but can be done. And you're willing to work under other cultures. Be willing to learn how to make decisions factoring other cultures. And willing to be generous with grace and patience. So the book, my friend Anderson writes with the title Gracism. We need to function with much gracism. And yes.
I know that your life is full of rich examples of that.
Why? Oh, that's. Oh, let me finish this then. No. But though we lack all of this can be cultivated over time. You're willing to start the journey, you can cultivate. You know, yes, sir.
You said cultivate over time, but you also have the challenge of cultivating it quickly, right? Because you might lose the second generation.
I mean, but the second generation is much more patient with this process than the present leadership is willing to learn.
Let me get this straight. You're not talking about heaven either. You're talking about on this side.
Brother, I've not been there. If I've been there, I'll text you. I'll tell you what.
I get that comment a lot. They're talking about this. They're like, not on this side of heaven.
No, it can be done. You know, I mean, when it's done, in some ways, the international church has done this unconsciously. Are a necessity.
I think that answers the question I'm going to ask. Do you see people developing this way intentionally or just more organically?
No, I think what I think, some people do that, but the numbers are not critical. There's not a critical mass of them to make this happen. So there'll be one person in Virginia, another person in Colorado Springs, and two in San Jose. You can't put that church together, right? But what we need to do is we need to both bless and teach, but also teach and instruct and cultivate leaders to move up. It can be done. No, I've got examples all over at different stages. Okay, what are some core values of IMC churches? Number one, remains faithful to the Bible in the midst of diverse spiritual expressions and traditions. That means we really need to ask, is it core to the Bible? Is it core to the Bible? Really makes you a biblical scholar better than you have ever been. Because you really have to say, does the Bible really require this? Does the Bible really say this? Or is it what I think the Bible says. They really become sharper. Secondly, maintain zero tolerance to partiality. People talk about partiality and prejudice and all that. I just say, you know, it's not a race problem, it's a sin problem. It's human nature. And you know, there is racism all over the world. You know, I've been in about 173 countries, there's no country I've not seen racism. If you listen very carefully, suddenly somebody's putting it on somebody else. They're talking about their neighbors, you know, neighbors across the border. Racism is a human sin problem. It's not a Spanish problem, it's not a white problem, it's not an African problem. It is a human sin problem. Go back to Genesis 1 to 3. If you're not sure. Okay? We have to accept that. We need to be reminded of that. And reminded of that. So, you know, I all these years I moved around. I have very few examples of experience of being looked with prejudice. One reason is I'm not looking for it. If you look for it, you'll find it. I am not looking for it. Secondly, if they show it, I say it's a human sin problem. He's a human, so he's sinful. So he just displayed natural quality. Why get surprised? You read the Bible. Thirdly, celebrate diversity in the unity rooted in the Holy Spirit. Strives to select, whatever your polity is, appoint godly, qualified, ethnically representative transcultural leaders. No tokenism. So in my congregation, which for some time I was the Filipino elder on the elders board.
I don't look Filipino.
Yeah, I don't look Filipino. I was a Filipino elder. Because I wanted that group of people to be represented, but at the same time, I was cultivating leadership in that group that will take my place. And they felt good that somebody who shepherds us and I'm moving with them, I'm cultivating, and then about 3 years, actually in 2 years he could have, but his work situation was such, he asked one more year, third year, I was able to give him, and he sat at the elders, and I was out. And so, fourthly, demonstrate the agape love by giving preference to others over ourselves. Number six, functions by open, honest sharing of lives in fellowship and community. You need to be both open and honest. Some people are open but not honest. Others are honest but not open. So you can be honest and not open and nobody would know what you think. That cultivation, I mean, it should be true of any church, but in this context, all the more true to say, you know, I was a little uncomfortable the way communion was done last month. And tell why. See? And tell why. And let's talk. Let's discuss. Maybe that is the reason that was... So are you uncomfortable because it's new? Are you uncomfortable because you feel it's wrong? Are you uncomfortable because it's wrong? See, many, many people, when they try new things, they feel uncomfortable. The moment they think they're uncomfortable, they think it's against the Holy Spirit. Back to Scripture. Now, 7 displays an ongoing teachable spirit, being open and willing to learn biblical values from one another. I think a lot of cultures have a lot to teach each other. No culture can teach everything about everything, but we see wonderful demonstrations of what would God like in community in other cultures. And we want to be richer for it because we are together. Together. But willing to learn. Humble enough to learn. Teachable spirit. 8. Encourages the use of spiritual gifts and talents. And 9. Committed to discipling the people groups locally and globally. Let me tell you what this I added very recently. What I've noticed in the intentionally multicultural church, we become navel gazers very quickly. Because we have so much effort is given to, we forget our responsibility in the global scene. And it's a problem with several new church movements, whether it's IMC or not. But they don't have a global vision. They have great passion to reach their community. One segment of the community, but they don't develop simultaneously a global. So I added this since 4 or 5 years ago. Okay. Any questions on this? Is it making sense? Okay. Okay. What are newcomers looking for? What are newcomers looking for? They're looking for warm welcome, unconditional agape love, and genuine friendship. Now, from Western perspective, many of our warm welcomes are no better than a Walmart welcome. Walmart? Do you have Walmart here? I'm sure it's here. I just was in Walmart headquarters recently, a few weeks ago, in Bentonville. Arkansas. Many of our, and some of our churches, our warm welcomes are worse than Walmart. Welcome. But it's not just a warm welcome. Is it just a lightning smile? Or is it an agape heart? Right? And genuine friendship. So more recently, about 2 years ago, I developed a seminar called Welcoming and Embracing Newcomers. Many of our welcomes are paper thin. How do you welcome and embrace newcomers? Secondly, they're looking for mega doses of encouragement. Thirdly, they're looking that you'll recognize differences without judgment. Does that make sense?
No.
Who doesn't understand that? You need to recognize differences without making judgment. What's a newcomer coming? You know, just like, you know, this happened in my own church. I brought a person who got saved on Wednesday. This is a person whose name I had come to the prayer meeting and shared for several weeks. I said, I'm sharing Christ. Caucasian, came to Christ, brought him to church after he came to Christ. But I usually bodyguard my new believers because there are piranhas in our churches, piranha Christians. So I bodyguard them. I don't want their first experience to be a negative experience. So I bodyguard. I don't let leave sight of. I see them even in the parking lot. I just don't see you at church. I'll see you 20 minutes before service. And I get there half an hour before service. Now why? If he shows up early, he may run into a piranha Christian. And game will be over. Bodyguard. And so happens, one of my piranha Christian brothers, I hope he's not my neighbor in heaven, he pulls me aside. You see the one you talked about who received Christ. See it? Then what's in his pocket? I was with him for the last hour and a half. I never saw his white shirt with his cigarette box, and it was a problem for my piranha Christian brother. I didn't answer him. I walked away. What did he say?
White box?
Why? No, he had a cigarette box in his white shirt. And they saw it, and I did. You can make judgments. But I'm just giving you one example. Just add the cultural factor to that. What if he came in with one of his Muslim mosque caps? Oh, the whole outfit. Or the Christmas tree, number 4. representative ethnic leaders in staff and lay leaders. And churches that do not work hard at it will not produce them. Just have to work hard at it. It's not easy. Number five, church functioning as an extended family. Friends, many cultures of the world, family is important, and they see church as an extended family. Not just church, it's my extended family. You have to make that. What are they looking for? Number six, language translation helps for those who can't understand. Different ways. One is that. The other one is to have somebody say, you know, meet with them within 48 hours and walk through the sermon with them. Number seven, practical help. Newcomers are looking for practical help. Everything from, and you just do not know this person, you know, on Easter we had a family that moved in to Regina from Iran 9 days before. They needed to know how to shop, how to open a bank account, how to get their hospitalization, how to find a local doctor before there's an emergency. This is a practical help. Huh? Right. School. How to move, like my wife has this ministry by which she collects furniture and has a record of where what is. She says there's a table in so-and-so's basement, there is a bed with no backboard at this place. She has a record, and she was trying to find out how to put all this together and find somebody who have a half-ton truck to take them and to the right place. Practical help. That's what newcomers are looking for, especially from the nations of the world. So friends, so don't walk out of here thinking you have to kill your church. Okay. Don't do that. Don't close down your church. That's not what it's saying. But at the same time, look for ways to sponsor, cooperate, collaborate for intentionally multicultural congregations for the sake of the future generations. Okay. Word from the spot. Yes, go ahead.
So I really appreciate what you've been discussing, and I see some good signs in our church. Now, the challenge we are facing today is as we grow larger and larger, for example, how can we maintain the council of extended family when you go from 100 to 300 to 500?
Right. And so you have to figure out how do you create family. Could be family by creating congregation within the congregation, or cell groups, you know, different ways it can be done. So when I say I'm part of the family, I do not know my whole extended family. You know, I have an extended family fairly large.
Does it involve a risk to develop a mainstream church with other ethnic groups, building habitat?
Well, right, it does. An opportunity to fellowship, to tell the Iranian fellowship and say, guys, you know, it's good you guys meet, it's good you come to services, but maybe you need to meet with the Ethiopian Fellowship once every 6 months. Encourage them, facilitate, not weekly, because it's difficult. Do something together. And if your church is big, so big that you have to, baptismal services, I think you need to ask yourself, if you have several congregations, how do you mix and match and have baptismal services? You know, so if you have too many and you can't bring all of them in the same congregation, can you do one Spanish and the Chinese coming together for their baptismal service? It encourages, wow! 6 people came to Christ in the last 5 months. We have to be creative. Yes, sir.
Thank you so much, TV.